Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Ask the Expert session. Today's topic is WebSphere Virtual Enterprise. My name is Joseph Lam, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide number 2. In today's session, we will start off by introducing to you our panel of experts. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to WebSphere Virtual Enterprise. Next, our panel of experts will answer questions that were pre-submitted to us through email. Then, we will open the lines for a live Q&A period. And finally, the session will end with a summary of today's webcast. Moving on to slide number 3. At this point in time, I would like to introduce you to our panel of experts for today's call. Our panel consists of Adrian Fauenfelder, Software Development Engineer. Next, we have Steve Kierig, Software Development Engineer.
Hi, this is Steve Kierig. I've been with IBM for 9 years, and for those years I've been working with WebSphere Virtual Enterprise, where my main focus is the application placement controller and health monitoring. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Then we have Anil Ambati, Software Development Engineer.
Good morning, everyone. I am Anil Ambati. I've been working in IBM for the last 10 years. For the last 3 years, you know, I've been working in the WebSphere Virtual Enterprise development team. Specifically, I'm in charge of components like DWLM controller, DWLM client, work profiler, and middleware agent. Thank you.
Thank you, Anil. Then we have Robert Outlaw, Software Support Engineer.
Hi, my name is Robert Outlaw. I have been supporting WebSphere products from a level 2 standpoint for 6 years, and 3 of those years supporting WebSphere Virtual Enterprise.
Thank you, Robert. And finally, we have Keith Smith, Software Development Engineer.
Hi, good morning. I'm Keith Smith. I've been with IBM for 13 years and with Virtual Enterprise since its inception, and I'm currently the Chief Architect for Virtual Enterprise.
Thank you, Keith. So before we get to the question and answer period, our panel would like to give you a technical overview of the topic. Moving on to slide number 4, and please go ahead, Robert.
Yes, thank you. So today we'll be discussing just a few specific topics related to WebSphere Virtual Enterprise. We'll be going into a little bit more detail about how some of the autonomic components fit in when dealing with common questions such as how is work processed by the ODR, how does application placement controller figure out its logic. We'll also be discussing a couple other topics regarding how to meet your service level agreements using the ODR, and we'll be going into a little bit of discussion regarding what kind of troubleshooting options you have with WebSphere Virtual Enterprise. The overall presentation will be, I would say, mid-level technical. Some familiarity of the product will be needed to fully follow the presentation. And let's go to slide 5. So, first question. How does the Application Placement Controller, or APC, decide when and how often to make placement changes? And to answer this question, I'm going to be handing the presentation over to Stephen Kierig. And let's go to slide 6.
Hey, thank you, Robert. This is Steve Kierig. So the question was, how does placement decide to make its changes and when to make those changes? So the Application Placement Controller runs every minute where it's collecting data about all of the application servers, such as, you know, the current CPU usage and memory usage and a variety of other data points. And it takes that data in and makes decisions on whether it needs to start or stop application servers based upon that data. APC will either do, you know, a start if you have high CPU demand and that demand is not being met by the currently number of start application server instances, or similarly for memory usage. And also APC, right, if an instance is started but not needed and another instance could use that resources, it could choose to stop the application server instance and start another one. Joseph, can you switch to slide 7, please? APC is also constrained to do application servers stops and starts based upon the set of criteria set on the dynamic cluster, such as the minimum number of instances or the maximum instances, and such things as vertical stacking and strict isolation. And another thing I'd like to point out with the application placement controller is, even though I said the application placement controller runs every minute, there is times when it will actually not run every minute, and that is after it issues a change. When it issues the change, it will wait what we call the minimum time between placement changes. And this is a property that can be found in our administrative console. By default, that is set to 15 minutes. So, Joseph, I think that's all for that question. We can move on to slide 8.
Okay. So, thank you, Steve. This is Robert again. The next question, what scripts are available for obtaining easy-to-review troubleshooting data? And how do I use the Webster Virtual Enterprise binary trace facility? And to answer this question, I believe I was handling this over to Keith.
That's correct. This is Keith. So let's move on to the next chart, please, Joseph. So in order to, let me first talk about two scripts that are delivered that are very useful. The first is the odrdebug.py script. This has been in the product since 6.1. It is robust. It is also very lightweight in terms of the overhead that it introduces to your environment. So for example, the types of debugging things that information it can provide are reasons for example, a 404. It might tell you that the routing is disabled to a web module, or that the URL matched the context root of a web module, give the name of the web module, but it did not match the virtual host, and it'll also give you the name of the virtual host that was associated with the request. Give 503 errors as well. You can enable, again, on a per error code basis. So if you have a 503, you simply enable it for that, and it'll give you reasons such as no servers in the cluster, give the cluster name, or running in a web module, and it gives the web module name. Or, for example, all servers running in a web module are in maintenance mode, which is another feature of Virtual Enterprise that would prevent being routed to. So let's move to the next chart, please, Joseph. The second script is dumpxdstate.py. This is a script that simply dumps a lot of information about the state of the ODR and actually about the state of the entire cell to which we're routing. Specifically, the entire CC tree with the ODC tree contains all configuration and runtime state of application servers and applications. Also, a lot of the autonomic controllers that we're talking about somewhat in this presentation, for example, the application placement controller or we'll speak later about the autonomic request flow manager is another controller, and there are other controllers as well that it dumps state for. And then lastly, let me mention about the binary trace facility. This was something that was introduced in 6.1.1 version of the product. It is very lightweight. It allowed us to enable certain debugging things by default. In particular, some of the reasons for having a 404 or a 503 or a 504 for that matter, or other error codes are actually traced by default. So in order to, you can use the trace command that is in the was home bin directory to just run it with no arguments, and it will give you a usage message. The most, there are actually two usage. There's a trace read, as mentioned on this chart, and you simply give it the directory and the types of thing of records that you want to read, and it can filter out only those records. And in order to know what type of records are available, you can use the trace info command, which is, again, on the usage message. And that will give you an XML representation of the types of information that are available in the trace record. So that will hopefully help in debugging. So let's move on to the next chart.
This is Robert again. Just to transition here into question number three, how does the on-demand router, or ODR, as we always abbreviate it, process requests? And to answer this question, I believe Adrian?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. I believe you were scheduled to take this one.
Right. So thank you, Robert. I'm Adrian Vraunvelder, and since I was testing my mute button earlier, let me just give a real quick introduction. I've been with IBM for about 23 years, and the last three of which have been in WVE, WebSphere Virtual Enterprise, where I have worked on the on-demand router, specifically the Dynamic Workload Manager client component, the Classify and Expression Parser components, and more recently in the Application Placement Controller, or APC. So how does the ODR process request? Joseph, if you could proceed to slide number 12, that would be great. So the ODR gets a request in. You know, the ODR is an extension of base WAS, WebSphere Application Server. It's an extension. And it gets a request in, and its primary reason in life is to find a target cluster to which to route that request, and then specifically a server within that cluster. Every server in the on-demand router is represented in a cluster, even standalone servers. They're represented in pseudo clusters. So the first thing that the on-demand router does is it examines a set of routing rules which have specific operands which match various parts of the request, the headers or cookie names or the URI and various other things. They're well documented online. And it tries to match that request to a routing rule. The routing rule action may be reject, or it may try to subset the set of servers to which the request is routed. And then after it's gone through that process, the on-demand routing rules can only be set using the wsadmin command from the command prompt. There's no console, at this time, there's no console way to set the ODR routing rules. And also, it's important to note that these are not application routing rules. The on-demand routing rules are application-independent, and they're the very first thing that gets evaluated. Next, then, is evaluation for, you know, the on-demand router tries to identify to which application the request was to be routed. And once it's discovered that and the web module to which to route, it identifies a set of, you know, that's attached to a set of application routing rules, which it then tries to evaluate. And the application routing rules are set under the routing policy of the application in the console. Joseph, could you proceed to chart 13, please? Each set of routing rules is intended to subset the previous, to further subset the set of target servers to which we can route the request. So once we've gone through the application routing rules, which, by the way, are, you know, you can forward, you can permit traffic, you can reject traffic, a number of other things. Once you've evaluated those, then we make sure that we have the proper edition of the application, and the application edition is going to have a set of service policies that are attached to it, which allows the on-demand router to prioritize the traffic. All right, so moving on along then, you know, the application routing rules have been identified and a target cluster is selected. At this point, the on-demand router needs to determine whether it has to preserve session affinity or whether it can load balance the request. If the request has a session cookie on it, which means it's an in-session request, then the on-demand router attempts to preserve session affinity. which is, you know, the routing that request to the same server that set the session in the first place. And this is sort of more of a high level view. I mean, obviously you can have session sharing across back end servers. If session affinity was not requested, then the on-demand router attempts to load balance the request to the least loaded back-end server that it can find. And it determines this through a set of weights that are calculated by a dynamic workload manager component, which is keeping track of numerous attributes on the back-end server to set these weights. And then finally, after a target cluster is selected, then the on-demand router will pass the traffic to ARFM, the Autonomic Rate-Based Flow Manager, which then decides whether or not to queue the request in order to achieve the service policy goals that may have been set. And then finally, you know, after ARFM has, when it dequeues the request off of its queue, then it forwards it to the back-end server. And that is how the on-demand router routes traffic. Slide 14, Joseph.
Okay, so thank you, Adrian. Question 4, what is the best way to troubleshoot bad response codes, such as 404s, 500s, 503s, that are returned from the ODR when issuing requests to it? And I believe
Adrian,
you're also lined up for this one as well.
Right. So question 4 again is how to troubleshoot bad response codes, and this is a very broad topic, and so I'm just going to touch on a couple of different items here. I think the first thing to consider is that is to try to determine where the bad response code originated. You know, the response code could have originated on the back end server and be passing through the on-demand router. Oh, Joseph, could you please advance to slide 15? So the first thing is to determine where the response code originated, whether it originated on the back-end server or on the ODR. And a quick way to do that is to look at the local.log or the proxy.log files. The local.log file will log error codes that originate on the on-demand router, and the proxy.log file will log response codes that originated on the back-end server. If it's a 500 response code, that is 500, not 502 or 503 or anything like that. If it's a 500 response code and it's local, then there's going to be an FFDC, a first failure detect file in the FFDC's directory, which is a peer to the logs directory. You know, 500 generally indicates that there was some sort of internal error, like an array index out of bounds or something of that nature. That will be a problem that IBM service is going to have to address, and there should be clues as to what happened there in the FFDC directory. Keith already mentioned a number of tools that can be used for debugging, and I think he mentioned the Btrace tool. The very next step that I would take when debugging a response code type error, especially, you know, 503 or 404, is to look at the Btrace for clues as to why the request didn't get routed. And this is, again, assuming that the response code originated on the on-demand router. You can look at the Btrace files, and it gives you a snapshot of the topology of the on-demand router that's pertinent to that particular response code. It should be in there. If it's not, then, you know, or if the information there is not sufficient, then it's often possible to flesh that out by using the odrdebug.py and recreating the problem. So one of the things that the customer may or may not want to be familiar with is the ODC tree, which is the database that the on-demand router uses to keep track of the topology of the network. And often in service we will refer to getting a snapshot of the ODC tree, and the Btrace has a little snippet of that ODC tree in it. So if there's a routing problem that originated on the on-demand router and the ODC tree shows that, you know, the topology is correct, which is as the customer expects, then there's probably some sort of internal processing error that went wrong. If the ODC tree does not show the topology that the customer expects, then the next step, of course, is to figure out why. For instance, for a 503 type of error, which is like server not found, then we would look at that snippet of the ODC tree and see whether, in fact, the server that to which we expected the request to be routed was in the target cluster or not. And if it was in the target cluster, again, that's probably some sort of internal error. If it was not in that cluster, then we must ask, you know, why wasn't it in that target cluster? Was the server recently brought online, or does the server actually exist, or did we misspell the server name somewhere? These are all, you know, again, you have to play detective here. Could we move to slide 16 now? Okay, so moving on to the debugging phase here, I think we need to ask next, is the problem recreatable? So we've identified a problem, we think it's a real problem, now we want to try to collect more problem determination data on it. You know, if the problem is easily recreatable, then, you know, hurrah, we can use some of the tools that are available, such as the odrdebug.py script, or the trace strings, and then recreate the problem to collect, you know, lots and lots of information that will help us to identify what the exact nature of the problem is. In version 6.1.1, you know, we have must gather script strings that we use. For example, if there is something that if it's a routing problem, then we have an ODR must gather string that we ask customers to set via the console or via the command prompt. In version 7.0, we have another script now that's called must gather, and you just give it the status code like 503, and then it'll set the right strings and it'll collect the right files when the problem, you know, for that particular problem. And then finally, you know, after setting all that and recreating the problem, you have to go back and look at the trace log, the btrace format, and look at the btrace or look at the trace.log files to see, you know, especially in the time frame during which the problem happened, to see what is the exact nature of the problem. And that is how I would go about debugging, you know, certain types of error code problems. I think we're ready for the next question then, which I believe is, I'll let Robert announce it.
Yeah, let's go to slide 17. So question 5, how can the on-demand router be leveraged to meet your service level agreements for your application work? To answer this question, I'm going to turn it over to Anil. Let's go ahead and go on to slide 18.
Thank you, Robert. The question is, how can the ODR be leveraged to meet your SLA? Please go to slide 18. Okay, we are already there. So in virtual enterprise, service level assurance or, you know, differentiation, you know, is achieved by defining service policies. A service policy is a construct in virtual enterprise. Basically, it allows you to specify classify traffic. Basically, you can think of classifying traffic as grouping URIs and associate a goal for these URIs. The ARFM gateway, Autonomic Request Flow Manager gateway, which actually runs in the ODR, working in conjunction with controllers like ARFM controller, APC, application placement controller, and work profiler, enforces these service policies. As Adrian alluded to earlier, ARFM prioritizes requests by queuing if it deems necessary. I mean, it doesn't queue normally in normal conditions, but if it deems necessary, it queues lower priority traffic to meet the goals of higher priority traffic. So ARFM, like I said, ARFM will not queue traffic until application server utilization approaches the configured CPU overload threshold, which is set in the ARFM configuration panel in the admin console. I think the default is 90%. So prior to version 7.0 was GA recently. Prior to that, the service policy goals are specified in terms of response times. So it's really important to profile the traffic and specify the response time goals, such that requests are classified under service policy have similar response times. And the response time goal is higher than typical response time that you would expect in a when the system is not loaded. So that ARFM has wiggle room to enforce the service policy goals. So when setting the response times has been a problem with the customers, so far we have seen, which causes ARFM to queue when it should not, when the load is light. So starting 7.0, we introduced new type of goals, the rate-based goals and importance-based goals to alleviate this problem. So rate-based service policy is basically ARFM allocates throughput value or a rate for each service policy. The higher priority policy gets a higher throughput value, basically. So this means that, you know, if a particular class of traffic has a higher throughput, that means it's given a higher priority. The second type of service policy that was introduced in 7.0 was importance-based. The goal was really to simplify service policy creation. You know, like I said earlier, you know, customers were finding it difficult to set service policy goals based on service times, response times. So the goal is to let them not set the service policy creation easily so that they don't have to profile the application. So ARFM bases its response time target, our goal, based on the observed service times and automatically adjust the target value. So basically not necessitating the user to set the service time goals. Joseph, please go to slide 19. So as I mentioned earlier, ARFM works with other autonomic controllers like APC to make prioritization decisions. It works with APC to bring additional resources when CPU reaches the CPU threshold that I mentioned earlier. So before it even considers queuing, it works with APC to bring additional resources if they're available up so that it can process the requests during the peak load. It is very important to have to plan in such a way you have additional capacity available to meet the service goals when the load is peak. So this lets APC to start servers as needed to meet the workload requirements under heavy load. So to get in a nutshell, that's how the ARFM works with a different work controller to make prioritization decisions. To get more information on ARFM, we have a good white paper on our Virtual Enterprise Wiki. So it's really suggested if you're planning to use ARFM or planning to are already using ARFM. So I think the link is specified in the appendix section of the presentation. That's all from me, Joseph.
Thank you to our panel of experts for answering the pre-submitted questions. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for live Q&A period. And while we wait for the first question through the telephone, I am going to announce our first question through the group chat. The first question is, are the topics we discussed today documented in details in documents or articles?
So I know this is Robert. I know that we do have some specific documents regarding ODR request debugging that are out there. I believe we have at least one paper out that we've published on this outside the Info Center. I believe I gave a WebSphere technical exchange on this, I believe, sometime last year that went into more detail. So I know for that particular topic, there certainly are some additional documentation for that.
Yeah, if I could add to that, there's a good article. If you look on DeveloperWorks, you search for ODR best practices, and it gives some good information about the flow of requests that Adrian spoke to about and about how to use the various sets of routing rules.
Okay, so we are going to move on to the next question in the group chat. The next question is, pertaining to the SLAs and ODR, how does the ODR retrieve performance-related information from the application servers and host?
You know, there's various mechanisms in place that collect metrics. For example, the workload profiler collects information on service times and feeds that into the ARFM component, which then you know, is the component that's in line with the request processing and can perform queuing based on, you know, based on the factors that it's being fed. And then additionally, you know, APC, the application placement controller, is also getting a set of metrics that are being reported up from the various nodes, in which it's, you know, there's a fairly complex algorithm, which I'm not prepared to discuss in detail, but, you know, as Steve mentioned, it's comparing what the predicted demand of an application of an application is against the available capacity where the application is running, and decides whether or not to start additional JVM instances based on that on that algorithm. So is that the does that answer the question?
Yes. So as a follow-up question to that, does the ODR communicate directly with the application servers, or does the ODR communicate through the node agent to monitor application server performance? Additionally, what, if any, impact is there if the node agent is not available?
Yeah, I can take that if you like. This is Keith. So, no, the ODR does not communicate directly for gathering performance data. The controllers do. The controller, in particular, the ARFM controller is the controller that is getting CPU statistics directly, and the controller then communicates to the ODR, to a component running within the ODR to provide very lightweight instructions on how it should perform, how it should manage various workflows. So all of the, and with regard to the question of what happens if a node agent goes down, the ARFM controller is an HA managed item that can run in the D manager, the node agent, or in an ODR. So it's always going to be available because it's an HA managed item. It's going to be elected to run as a singleton in a single place in the cell. And that's the end of the response there. So we can move on to the next question.
Thank you, Keith. The next question we have here is, how does WebSphere Virtual Enterprise Service Policy, or SLAs, address a response time of a poorly written, poorly performing application? Will it gain performance when managed by WebSphere Virtual Enterprise?
I think the short answer is no, it doesn't. I mean, I don't think it gains performance. So the main aim of the ARFM and other controllers is to increase the throughput, so to get the optimal throughput for any application. So that is the reason I was, during my presentation, I was mentioning that response times of, you know, creating service policies, so that grouping of URIs with similar service response times is important, so that some works in optimal way to get the highest throughput possible. So that would be the shortest answer. I mean, I don't know if anybody wants to jump in, Keith.
Okay. Yeah. I guess in the entire goal of virtual enterprise and the way the ODR works is to minimize response times. And so I would mention one thing in particular that it does that I think we've seen this flesh out at a lot of customer sites that actually presented an impact on this. And they saw that the way that the ODR load balances based on what's called the weighted least outstanding request algorithm, since it uses that rather than a weighted round robin, it evens out and thus minimizes response times overall. And we've seen that certainly fleshed out at a lot of customer sites. So I think this customer that spoke, I think I can say the customer's name. It's public knowledge because they're presented at Impact. It's American Airlines, AA.com. They told at Impact how the performance improvements that they had seen as a result, and it's really due largely to the way that this load balancing algorithm as well as ARFM work together to minimize response times.
Thank you. Our next question is BBSON enabled by default in WebSphere Virtual Enterprise version 7?
Yes, it is. It was not enabled prior to that for compatibility reasons, but it is enabled in Virtual Enterprise 7 by default, and it's a recommended best practice even prior to version 7. And we do document the reasons why you would not be able to use BBSON. They're very, very few. And so that's documented in the Info Center under BBSON.
Krishna, your line is open.
Hi, this is Krishna Adler from Bank of America. I have a quick question on the option to disable APC and ARFM controllers when those services are not being used. So let's say the ARFM queuing is disabled and all the dynamic clusters are running in a manual mode and APC is not being used at all and the service is disabled, but we still have those ARFM controller and APC controllers running. Is there an option in VE7 to disable them in total?
This is Steve Carrick. With the application placement controller, if you go through the console and there's a checkbox that says enable, if that's not checked, the application placement controller should not be running. That would disable it, and that's available in prior releases along with 7.0. Keith or somebody, is that the true for ARFM too?
Yeah, I think ARFM, I don't recall that. There is a custom property that you can set, I think, to disable ARFM.
Yeah.
To disable the queuing. But I think the ARFM...
ARFM can be disabled at the console.
Yeah. So I guess it can be, the whole controller cannot be disabled. I think it's used by the stats that it produces, used by different components in the VE. So, but like you mentioned, the queuing part can be disabled. I think I need to get back to you on the step that you would need to do to disable ARFM queuing.
Yeah, well, there's a PY script for others. I know Krishna is aware of this for disabling queuing, but it is disable ARFM.py.
Yeah, I mean, my main question is around the controller itself.
Right, yeah, and there is not today. This is something we could certainly entertain because it's something we could entertain as... And I'll mention for others on the call, something I know we've already discussed with Krishna is that a best practice is to have the ARFM controller run in the node agents or the D manager rather than in the ODR. So, but with regard to your original question about totally disabling ARFM, that's something we could entertain. We certainly, we just got your request recently, Krishna, on that a couple of days ago. So, we will entertain that in the future.
Thank you, Keith.
Yes.
We have no further questions on the phone.
Thanks again for your participation. At this point in time, I'm going to move on to slide number 22 and pass the presentation back to Robert for a summary of today's session.
Thank you, Joseph. So today we've discussed a select number of topics regarding WebSphere Virtual Enterprise, and we hope that this information can be taken away in this presentation. You can use later to reference when you have questions. We've also answered some questions that have been asked, and we hope that this presentation has been useful and for you.
Thank you, Robert, for a great summary. At this point in time, we will conclude the Ask the Expert session.